The senior pastors went and found the coolest youth pastor they could get that would get the lights, the sound, the energy. Really, if you look at what great churches are doing today, the new churches, looks like our old youth ministries from 10 years ago.
This is the Church Growth Nation Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is Ross Turner. You're listening to Church Growth. We got Chris Sonksen with Church Boom. And today we are interviewing Doug. How do you say his last name?
Garasik.
Garasik, like Jurassic Park.
Just like Jurassic, but it's Garasik. Yes, sir.
How long have you known Doug?
I've known him for, probably about 5 years. I spoke at his church, amazing church. Guy's an incredible leader. God's doing some awesome things in his life. So probably about five years.
Yeah. So they're in Youngstown, Ohio?
Yeah, Youngstown, Ohio, multi-site. I think their church is about 7 years old. Mm-hmm. They've tapped into some really great things on giving. They've tapped into some really good insights on church planning, which we're going to want to talk to him about, of course. He's got a pulse on some really great stuff. He's doing an awesome job.
Rust City Church is the name of the church. Yep. And this guy's got a great beard. I like it.
Yep. If you're a Dodger fan, you'll recognize him right away.
Amen, brother. That's awesome. I really liked the one thing, my favorite thing that he talked about that I can't wait for everybody to hear is when he said that some people are looking at the clock when they should be looking at the calendar. Really stuck out to me is like people are like, I need it now. I need our church to grow now. What things can I do to like get people by this weekend when God's looking like bigger picture, chill out, bro. Everything's okay. It's going to work out. I thought he had some good insight on that. And the giving stuff, I mean, you would know. It seems like he's really onto something with that.
Yeah, he's doing it. He's got some great insight on the giving. Definitely something for pastors to look at. And there's some good insight, I think, for church planters, to have the right perspective as they begin to plant their churches or even tapped a little bit into multi-site, and some of the things that need to be considered there. So, great information. Incredible.
It's Doug Garasik. I hope you guys enjoy this. Check it out. Doug, do me a favor, and for those that don't know you, kind of tell us about your church, what made you plant the church, what got you guys started, and kind of talk us through the history of Rustic City Church. Is it Rustic or Rust City Church?
It is Rust City Church. We got started in 2011. My wife and I were youth pastors at a really big mega church, and we wanted to come back home. Youngstown, where our church is, was the rust belt of the nation because it used to be the steel city of the nation. And then it dried up. And so we wanted to make a church that fit the community. And so we did Rust City Church, and we launched in 2011 with 14 people. It was massive. Massive launch. 14 people.
Crushing it.
Two were my parents and two were my siblings. So we were already playing with an advantage. And just had a heart to see the community radically changed. And so we did that. We met in an office building of a friend of mine. He let me use it for a year. He asked me how much could I afford to rent it off him. And I said, I could start with a dollar. Where do you need to be at? And he laughed and he said, I felt like God said whatever you wanted it for, I was going to give it to you for. So you get it for a buck for a year. And we were able to raise money. And then we moved from this office building to the largest mall in our community. We're next to Target. And we opened up with a grand opening and it was massive. We had over 500 to 600 people on our grand opening. A year later, and from start at 14 people to next year it was 500, and so it just explosive growth.
Wait now. You had 14 people, and then 500. What? What's the time?
It was over a year. I mean, we kept growing over that year, and we got to about 100 in a critical mass. And we just when we moved locations from this itty bitty office building where nobody could find. To right dab smack in the middle of the community at the largest landmark mall in the area. Obviously, it got attention. It was, the papers wrote up about it. Different news outlets were talking about it. It really captivated a community that this church moved into the local mall. And so I think for some people, they just want to see the gimmick. They just want to see, like, what is this, And it was massive. It was not what we expected. And so when it happened, it was just, it really, I'll tell you the truth, as exciting as it sounds looking back on it, it actually was really tough because we missed out on some growing pains that we would have gotten earlier that we actually had to do later with more people, if that makes sense. Mm. So like we could have learned some things with a smaller amount of critical mass that maybe would have got us more prepared to be a church larger, but it actually at sometimes hurt us because we were still operating as a church of 100 young adults that now had over 500 people showing up saying, where is help in this area, this area, this area? And we're going, we don't know anything. I'm 26. We're like, what are we doing here? You know?
That's awesome. Hey, Doug, so when you guys launched, you start with 14 people, and there's several people I'm sure that are watching this that are church planners. I'm a church planner myself. In a kind of a comparison, what do you think you did wrong? What do you think you did right?
So I don't think church planners are wrong when they decide to not work a job. So I don't want anybody to feel like, well, if I could raise money and my wife and I just got the church plant going, I will say this. What was right for me was to work a secular job, which I hadn't done in years. I got to be in the fabric of our community, not as a pastor. So that was really insightful for me to kind of get back to where people are and not in the micro ecosystem of what churches are. And also when we got started, I was unashamed to get every person who walked through our door cell phone number. Now, if it was a girl, my wife and I text them together. But if it was a guy, I text them Monday morning. Hey, I'm the guy that you talked to, or my wife and I talked to you. We would love to get coffee. We would share our story of coming home to plant the church. We'd buy them coffee, share our story. And then we'd ask them if they would consider, pray about joining this team. So no matter if they felt like they had resources or not resources, if they were Christians for a long time or not at all, we just said, God brought you to this crazy little church plant in an office building in the middle of nowhere because I think he wants to use you. And so many of those people are still part of our church today, which is crazy and fun. They got to see the growth over the, you know, now we're 7 years old. We have 4 campuses. And I mean, we continue to see God doing incredible things. Obviously, Easter just happened. Record break. Every year, the attendance records just break and break. And they're not, you know, there's some years where it's harder, but, you know, God just keeps getting faithful. I just know up front, we were so on fire to get people plugged in that they could feel the energy and can feel the passion that this is better than just going to that other church that doesn't need you or not going to church at all. You were a part of this miracle. I would tell you what I think we did wrong was we were super afraid to talk to people about money. And I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but because we came from a large mega church that had the connotation of being heavy handed with money, we swung the pendulum the other way and just said, hey, we're never even going to talk about it. We didn't even mention it in services. And so what we really did wrong for that first 100 plus people was we kind of taught them it was okay not to be generous. And it took me years to figure out how to fix that problem.
That's good. That's good. What is the, in the church planning, when you look at it now, you're starting to go out into the multi-site. Tell us a little bit about the strategy behind that. Do you guys, as you're launching more campuses, do you finding a building that has been taken over? Are you sending people there? What's your guys' strategy?
Yeah. It's changed over the years. And it changed because we just kept making mistakes. And so it wasn't changing because necessarily I had better ideas. We just kept realizing the ideas we had weren't working.
We're not doing good here. So let's try this.
Let's change by necessity, not change because we found a better idea. So when we exploded the campus that when we launched at the mall and it really grew right off the bat, I said, we got to add a site. We got to add a site. Cause we were doing 5 services a weekend. And I just said, we can't keep this pace. I just can't keep it. I'm not going to be able to endure this. We've got to open another campus. And so we made the decision to open another campus only 12-minute drive away. Now, it was in a totally different part of town. It was in a downtown district. It had a lot of hurting people that were different than what the suburban mall campus was attracting. And so we thought, this is going to be great. It's close. We can make it happen. And there are pros and cons to a closed campus. Everyone's got to figure that out on their own. We just found that it was so close and the experience was so much lower than the other campus that people were just getting not a great experience on who we were. And so we had to make a lot of changes. I would really say there's only 2 strong evidential reasons why you should plan a multi-site, you're out of room and you're tired of doing more services, or you really have another location that I think is far enough away that you can reach a whole new demographic. That's just my opinion. Either you're busting out the seams and it doesn't make financial sense to build a bigger building, so let's offshoot it, but let's think about how we strategically do that. Or there's another location X amount of miles away that we know we're not reaching that community, but we could reach that community. Mm. And so we have gotten very strategic on how do we have actually turned down multiple churches that have kind of they're at their dying leg. They got 15, 20 members left, whatever that is. And they're saying, just take over our building, you can have it. And so two churches we have flat out said, we want to help you, but you can't be a campus. There's certain things that just aren't working for us to be able to do that. Either location or the fact that the church itself doesn't have enough of the spaces that we do, how we do church. And so I have found as we've gotten further on this journey, say no more than say yes. Like, just realize you have a vision God gave you. Guard that vision. And I always think good is the enemy of great. We learned that from the book, you know, if great is out there, good isn't good enough. But reality is good is the enemy of great. And you just say, I'm going to guard myself from only just taking good ideas. And I also think another just little, if you give a side note on like when you go multi-site, you got to make sure your bench is deep enough to handle multi-site. Because if you just think, we're going to get out there and they're going to come. I really think it's great to build it in-house first. Like, one thing that we do is when we want to launch a new campus, we launch a new service at our main campus. And in that new service, we take the team that would eventually be planting the new campus and they manage the service. Because if they can't manage a service under the umbrella of what we already have going, why do I think they can manage a campus down the road by themselves? Like, it's only going to magnify who they are. And it's a great way to audit somebody if they can actually do it when no one else is watching them. How do they do it when they own a service with their team? And is it growing? Sure. And is it thriving?
Sure. Mm. Yeah, that's good. I would just concur with that. And I'm sure, Ross, you've heard some things with your own work that you do with churches. But, man, church planning, I do a lot of coaching and you had talked about all the phone calls you made, Doug, and all the, you know, hey, I got on the phone, I would text someone, hey, let's get coffee. I tell people all the time, man, if you can be happy doing anything else, then don't church plant, because it will take a ton of work. You got to make a ridiculous amount of calls. People, I don't know why people think, unless you're Brian Houston, you know, you're Hillsong, you just open up a church and 90,000 people show up, or, you know, Furtick, you know, you just whatever. But for the rest of us normal Americans, it's a lot of work to church plant. You got to make a million calls. You got to be out there pounding the pavement. This idea, I'm just going to open up church and everybody's just going to show up, like, man, good luck, because that's just not the way it goes.
Chris, can I say something on that point?
Yeah.
And Ross, you might edit this out of the video, so that's okay if you do. Right? I'm gonna go ahead and bend here for a minute, okay?
No way.
I'm just going to take it off the deep end. So I'm in my early 30s. I mean, I just turned 34. I've been church planter since I was 26. Here's what I think. I'm just going to give you from my decade of ministry what I've seen. My decade of ministry, we are all youth pastors of churches that had not so cool Sunday morning services, okay? Sunday morning services weren't as cool as our youth ministry. So what happened was the senior pastors went and found the coolest youth pastor they could get that would get the lights, the sound, the energy. Really, if you look at what great churches are doing today, the new churches, looks like our old youth ministries from 10 years ago. So what happened is some of these youth pastors missed the mark where they thought, I have all this platform that the church gave me, and I just got to do the fun stuff as a youth pastor. So I don't want a boss anymore. I'm going to go be a church planner. And I'm going to do all the fun stuff that I'm already having fun doing. Not realizing the way that the churches were built great was hard work, tearing the field, knocking down doors, being there for people. Like, these people put their blood, sweat, and tears to build these churches that church planner in the early 2000s got to just jump in and do youth ministry with a budget. And then all of a sudden they say, well, I can just go be a church planner and not have to earn all that extra stuff and get to right where I want to be. And I have found those guys have been punched in the face the hardest.
Yep.
Because they think, if I just do a cool service, people are going to come. And it's just not the way at least in my opinion, it's just not the way it gets done.
Yeah, 90% of us. I agree. Totally. You know, what I would say is we get a lot of calls from people that want to reach new people through marketing. And there's two ways to reach people. There is what I call the shotgun approach and the sniper approach. And the people who got funded as a church planner, they've got 50K to work with. The assumption is I can spend $2,000 a month on Facebook ads and Google ads and mailers, and our launch will come and it's just gonna work. You know, we'll make sure Sunday is good. The ones that make it, they embrace the hard work of sniper marketing. Means it's not like I'm gonna do this mass mailer and everybody in Kansas City is gonna see it and we're gonna get X percent. They go like, that guy right there, I know him. I know that family. I know they need to be here. I'm gonna call him. I'm gonna take him to breakfast. It's like one at a time, and you build relationships and you do the actual hard work of sitting down with that guy for coffee, or the personalities that are difficult. You meet with that guy and you go one at a time. And I think a church planter that's like got their back against the wall, they're in it, we're gonna do this, they embrace the one by one. And the people who are, you know, a little bit scarier as far as whether the church is going to work or not, they're just like, well, how much do I got to spend in marketing instead of doing the work? Do you agree with that?
I would agree with that 100%. And I would even say this. So we're now 7 years old, 4 campuses, a couple thousand people. And I don't say that to brag. I just kind of give you context of what we're at. We still have one of our largest budgets when it comes to our pastoral care side. Is we call them meet and treats. That's the term that it's an inside language for our staff. It's called meet and treats. We've been doing it since we were 14 people, where all we try to do when people are leaving the church, we try to identify who's new through different methods, get their cell phone number, whoever's connecting with them, text them to get coffee as soon as they can, and invite them on the journey. Yeah. Last year, we did over 1,000 meet and treats across the board. Mm. Now, if you add up that cost, there's some money involved there. And I don't spend a ton of I don't spend a ton on marketing, very little comparatively to what other churches our size would do. And some people have even suggested, well, that mean treat budget you could put right into marketing, and I refuse to, because I'm like, this is part of our secret sauce. This is how we lay the golden goose. Is we call it hand to hand combat. We meet with people, we hear their story, we hear where they are, we invite them on the journey to go with us, and we just simply say, we want to know you and help you get through and make friends in this church. Because I really do believe the more friends they make, the more likely they're gonna stay at your church.
Hey, one thing I just add real quick. Doug, you mentioned about youth pastors that youth services 10 years later, they're like, why don't I just become a senior pastor and do whatever I want? Then they realize, wow, it's a lot different. Two things I would think about it. Number one is, it is a lot different when you're in the chair. You're making massive financial decisions. You're trying to get a hold of property. It's, you know, I have seen it over and over. These guys that are youth pastors that are crushing it just go, you know, move 40, 50 miles away and open up a church and think everything's just going to happen. Like, there's a lot more to it than putting on a really cool service with really great lights and whatever. That's one thing. Second thing is just a thought out, shout out to everybody that's listening. Don't disrespect the past. I realize that the pastor that you may be serving under or have served under may be, in your opinion, a little out of date. However, he may be sitting on a $28 million property that you're going to find out soon is very hard to get.
Yep.
So respect the past. I think how you exit with grace and kindness is how God will allow you to enter into the next part of your ministry. So just be careful with that to up and coming pastors. You got to be careful to respect the past. Don't say it. They got there somehow. And you're going to find out how hard it is to get there. It is not easy.
Yeah.
Anyway, so those are our thoughts on that. Yeah.
You know, you've got a church plant that's working. You guys obviously have a great Sunday weekend experience. God showing up is powerful. The messages are good. But you know that right now we're in a weird season of the world where church planting is more celebrated than it has been in the past. It's something that's, you know, more of a trendy thing almost. You probably have stood back and watched friends or people from the outside that you are watching them from a distance as they plant and as they strategize. Chris, you too. I mean, you've got people that you talk to all the time that are, you know, how can we break 100? What are some things that you guys are finding that are a definite mistake that a lot of new churches are making?
Well, I would echo what we've already been kind of saying, is I think they want it so fast. And what if God isn't trying to do it as fast as you are? Mm. Like, what if God is looking at the calendar when you're looking at the clock? Mm. Like, it's got to be on my launch day. It's got to be massive. It's got to be this. It's got to be that. The one thing I think we've always had going for us is we haven't given God the ultimatum that it has to be a certain way. So our newest campus, the one we just launched this year, it's still in preview mode, but it's having services, it's moving, we're gonna hard launch it here in a little bit. But the reality is, my guy who's launching it with us, my campus pastor there, I had to sit him down with love and say, dude, you're hyperventilating over numbers that I don't even give a rip about. I care about the quality over the quantity. Hmm. And if the quality stays, if it is quality, healthy things grow. So, dude, you're splitting hairs. If we had 75 at a preview service and your goal was 125, you're splitting hairs over 50 bodies that in the 2 years from now, you won't even think about that preview service. So I would rather us, instead of our best day be our launch day, I'd rather our best day be 5 years and 10 years after our launch day. And I just think the one mistake I see is guys put all this juice and all this money. I'm not exaggerating. I know guys who put $250,000 into their launch experience. And I sit there and I go, you could run that church plant for probably 18 months on that $250,000. And it just blows my mind. I'm like, I get you want to break barriers before you ever have to deal with them. I understand all the philosophy there. And I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying, what if God doesn't do it the way you hoped he'd do it on there? And now you just set up for this huge disappointment versus, God, I'm going to just be a grinder. I'm going to put my head down. I'm going to trust that as I plow, you remove the stumps. As I sow, you caused it to grow. I believe that's in the Bible if we read it. And I'm just going to like focus on me doing my part and let you do your part. And so that's what I see. Chris, I don't know.
So you think the biggest thing is they want it too quick and they make decisions about quick.
I think we're built like that as Americans. I think if you're watching around the world, or in today's culture, in today's world, it's I want it now. It's microwave leadership. It's microwave. And I just want to ask you, would you rather have barbecue from a microwave or from some tin can slow cook off the side of the road with a dude missing teeth that's been doing it for 30 years? I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to JoJo every single time to get mine versus throwing it in the microwave because I want it right now. I mean, yeah. I like to cook meats. I like to smoke meats. It takes 10 hours sometimes to get the right flavor. And I just think we live in a world now, it's not just church. Church is a micro to the world where it's like all about celebrating the young guys who can do it faster than everyone else. Mm-hmm. I tend to celebrate the dudes that I see that are 30 years in and they're still loving ministry.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that. I'm guilty of that. I want things now.
We all
I just know that's my personality. I'm, you know, any guys that are church planners, I'm going to say 7 out of 10 of them, their natural talent is possibly more entrepreneurial than it is just pastoral. And I think people with that bend is a drive, and the downside of that drive is I want it now. I want it quick, and I want, like, I'm not waiting 10 years for this. I want it now. And I think that's, like, for me personally, just being transparent, that's the thing that gets me into trouble is I guess what my wife would say, I get ahead of God, is like, you know, I have a vision. I'm like, well, how can I do it by tomorrow? You know, instead of let's just be faithful and let's see what God wants to do over the long haul. And so I think that's probably wise that, you know, pastors are making decisions and obviously their back's against the wall. They got a family, they got kids, they got bills to pay. They know that is something in the back of their mind. I know that they tell themselves, I'm just gonna do what God's, you know, called me to do. He's called me to reach this city, but those bills are something that will motivate you, or the natural competitive desire of it, that I want it to succeed. My mother-in-law is gonna, you know, my cousins, I told them I'm planning a church. If it fails, I'm going to look like an idiot. That's in the back of their mind. So I'm with you. I mean, Chris, you guys have planted, I think, 19,000 campuses now.
19 and 10. Okay, 19,000.
You got it. Sorry, don't want to short you. But you see church planters probably in Orange County that are planning churches all the time. I mean, what are mistakes that you're seeing that are pretty common going on right now?
Yeah, you know, well, one I can tell you for sure is I have an Assemblies of God pastor, and if you are in any sort of charismatic nature whatsoever, whether that's Assemblies of God, Foursquare, Pentecostal, whatever, anything that is sort of spirit, you know, has a spirit context to it. I would say one of the biggest mistakes that pastors make is that somehow they think that spirit and strategy can't coexist. And that's just not true. The spirit and the strategy can coexist. There's no doubt we need God's spirit. I don't care if you're what background you are, you know, denomination you are. Let's understand this. If God doesn't show up, then that was a nice speech, and that's about all you get out of it. But on the flip side of it is I see a lot of guys, you ask them the questions, all right, so how are you going to grow the church? How are you going to market it? What are you going to do? How are you going to build up the team? Once you guys get going, once someone comes into your church, how do you get them fully engaged? What's your process there? They don't think that way. And once in a while, you know, it just kind of happens. But more often than not, the church plant fails because they're saying, man, I'm going to really rely on the Holy Spirit. And then here's what happened. And I'm not going to have the, I'm not going to put the strategy in place. And here's what's going to happen is if it goes right, they get the credit. If it goes wrong, then it was God's timing. And that's a mistake that I see pastors make all the time. Biggest thing I tell pastors all the time is be clear on what your strategy is. Definitely you need God. Definitely you need the Holy Spirit to move. Definitely you need God to move or you're in trouble. But you need to be really clear on what your strategy is and your structure. Develop that so you understand how you move people, how you get people in and how you move them rather than we're just going to open up church and not going to. Good. Open up church, but and have a nice Facebook ad. And those are all important. Yeah. But how are you going to move people along? I'm telling you, it's going to be an issue.
I say and this on top of that is we've worked with a ton of churches that go from pre-launch. They have their launch Sunday. They celebrate it. And then I feel like I'm talking to different people from then on out. It's like the people in pre-launch, they are so excited. They're aggressive. They're meeting with people and everything like that. And then they have their launch Sunday and they're like, well, sweet. Now I'm maintained. Now we, you know, have, oh, you know, we'll have our first staff member, but you know, I'm working on my sermon for this weekend. They stop being a church planter. Now the term church planting is a modern trend, but we have been told back from when the Bible was written to go be fishers of men, to go like outreach, go and tell new people, reach new people is the foundation of why we do anything we do. And so whether that means that you meet on Sunday or not, I think the core value is we should always have that church planter hat on of how can we reach new people. And we can use metrics like how can we grow 100 people or whatever, but the motive is like, yeah, because we're called to reach new people, to tell them about Jesus. And so I think that people, the mistake I'm seeing is they stop being as aggressive as they were once they realize, okay, it worked. We got 200 people. We can build from there. They relax. You should never relax. I mean, does that resonate?
Yeah. Can I say something too, Ross? I
mean, no, you cannot.
No. I'm going to say something that is just my opinion. I don't have facts to back it up. And I could be going off the deep end again, so you can cut this out of the podcast. I think because church planning has become so appealing and so accessible and so easy, and that's wonderful. But there's a two-edged sword to that as well. So there's a positive and then there's the other side. The other side that I've seen, this is just my opinion, is it's robbed the church as a whole of its mid-level amazing leaders. The great youth pastors, the great kids pastors, the great worship leaders, the people that great care pastors, they see the appeal of I can be my own boss. And so they jump into church planning. And I'm not here to beat up, I'm a church planner, Chris is a church planner. So we're, you know, you can say, well, he's being pretty hypocritical. But at the same time, I think there are few that are really called to say, I'm gonna go create work for others then to follow, pioneers. Mm. And I think because it's become so accessible, everyone thinks there can be a pioneer now. And what happens is it robs the local church of its amazing campus pastors, kids pastors, worship pastors, youth pastors that could be helping lead churches going from good to great. And it actually creates a void where there's like, man, I wish that guy would have gave it another couple years. And not because I don't want them to go, I want them to get what they still need and what they can also give to the local church in that role in that season. I was a youth pastor for 6 years before I planted a church. So I wasn't like, oh, 2 months into ministry and I'm gonna go do this. 6 years I gave to another man's vision. I worked his field so that in turn, I learned so much that I could carry into what I was able to do, but also less what God called him to do. So that's just kind of a random thought that I have.
I think that's so wise. We don't celebrate the number three person down the line. You know, the lead guy gets all of the celebration just because it's human nature. I think that if people would just truly embrace what has God called me to and where, then we would celebrate the people that have just been faithful in serving as an associate pastor for 25 years, and they have been content because they know that that's where God called them to. I think we need more of that.